Oh, that's right. We're right here. Believe it or not, it's 4:58 in the afternoon. If Vincent was supposed to be here for 5 o'clock, he's right on time. Unfortunately, it was supposed to be 4. But how you doing today, Vincent?
Obviously, an hour behind, but life is good. You know, daylight savings time is we're switching over in a couple of weeks. Apparently, I was just 2 weeks beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
My apologies to you and to all the listeners.
Well, thank you very much. So, what have you been doing today?
Well, you know, we're moving around rapidly every day. I was just over in McCormick, went and met with a wonderful group of folks over there to talk about how we could change the state. Stopped by the local newspaper and some small businesses. Everywhere I go, I try to go visit small businesses to talk about how we can grow our economy from within in South Carolina. And before that, I was in Columbia, South Carolina, speaking to a wonderful group of our state employees who work hard every day fixing our roads, helping to make the state work.
Sure.
And telling them that, you know, we could have a governor who was concerned about the nuts and bolts of state government and making it work again.
Well, I understand, and that brings up a good question. You know, our infrastructure is in very bad shape. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you, since the price of gas is dropping, would it be a good time to introduce a gas tax that could, if we pigeonholed that money so that senators and representatives couldn't move it to any other place, and it could be pigeonholed for fixing our state roads?
Actually, the problem with our funding for roads in South Carolina, and actually in America, is that we are totally reliant on the gas tax. It's important that we begin to find other revenue sources to support our roads.
Our gas tax here is very low.
It is. It used to meet our needs, but it is a declining source of revenue, and that's why we're in the fix we're in. In other words, if we put a penny or a nickel on the gas tax, let's say, probably in 5 years we'd be having this same discussion because less cars use gas. And most cars are getting tremendously better fuel efficiencies and will over the next year. That will escalate.
But so, it would be good for as far as for a consumption tax for who is using it and for the people that come through South Carolina, whether they vacation here or just going north-south.
Well, it's not a good tax for a consumption tax because you have cars that don't use gas, but they still use the roads. So, for example, our Highway Trust Fund nationally is going broke. It's going broke because they totally rely on the gas tax. They're going to have to find other revenue sources to put in there. So I proposed a three-part plan to fix our funding of our roads. And one that you got at is that we need to make sure that we're spending the dollars we have wisely. Mm-hmm. We have two entities right now that govern road funding, the State Infrastructure Bank and our Department of Transportation. I propose that we merge that governance so that we don't have the boondoggles that you might be referring to. And secondly, I've proposed that of the money that we have, at least 85% of it should go to fixing the existing roads instead of building new projects. And then thirdly, I talk about ways that we can diversify the revenue that comes into our state so that we can increase recurring funding by about $500 million a year, which is a big deal. I think sometimes people...
How would you do that? What? So, I mean, we don't have time to talk about all of them, but give us some of the highlights.
I will, and then people can go to my website to check out my book that I wrote on this very topic. But one of the highlights is to have an immediate cash infusion to fix the roads. And I would let about $1.2 billion in bonds. We did that for public schools to build schools statewide in the late 90s. Those bonds are being retired very soon. So we have that bonding capacity. We should do it. It makes sense to utilize bonds for long-term infrastructure because it pays over time. It's like what you do with a mortgage for your house. Then we need to have recurring revenue every year, and I propose between $400 and $500 million. I believe that on major projects like the widening of I-95, which needs to happen, it's 4 lanes, it's a disaster, then we should toll it. Most states do that for major projects. It captures some of what you said, which is some out-of-state revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I'd guess 50% of the cars at least on I-95 are coming from out-of-state. It also helps to is a true user fee. It gets folks, whether they're driving cars that use gas or not gas or high fuel efficiencies or whatever, it captures those dollars. I've talked about raising the driver's license fee. Right now it's $2.50 a year. I think that people would be willing to pay a little bit more if it would mean that they would have better roads. We also have low interstate truck taxes compared to some other states. I think that's a place that we should look to raise revenue as well, the goal being about $400 to $500 million in additional revenue a year.
How about some of the exemptions that are out there? For example, the railroads, I understand, some of the farmers, this type of thing. How about those exemptions?
Absolutely. We have about $2 billion in sales tax exemptions or loopholes. Some of them make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to not double tax items that go into manufacturing. In other words, if you make a a machine, you don't want to tax the pieces that go into the machine because it's going to get taxed on the back end. But there's some that don't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me that a modular home is taxed differently than a mobile home, for example. I think we need to look at the way we tax cars in South Carolina. There's a $300 cap on car sales.
Same thing goes for boats, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, for luxury cruisers.
Right. You can buy a yacht and you'll pay $300, or you can buy my 1996 Ford F-150 and you'll pay $300. That doesn't mean that you need to have a 6% sales tax on vehicles. You don't. It would be uncompetitive with other states. But you need to have some rational system that allows us to collect the revenue we need and is fair. It's not really fair what's going on now. So those are some ideas. There's many other exemptions out there that need to be looked at.
And what's your website?
VincentShaheen.com. It's real easy. And now, I wrote a book on all these topics that we've talked about, the big issues that you and I have talked about before on the radio. And it's called The Right Way. And you can download it for free on my website. And in there,
how are you making any money off this then, Vincent?
I like to say, you know, my opponent, Governor Haley, wrote a book about herself and she sells it. I wrote a book about South Carolina and I give it away for free.
And if you became governor, would you write a book about yourself, Vincent?
I don't know.
I don't know. See?
I've already written a book about myself. It's just sitting in the drawer by my
so you're just waiting.
Because nobody wants to read it.
Wait a minute. You're just waiting for the day you become governor, and then you're going to say, see, I've already got the book.
You know, I've written a lot of, I like to write. So I've written a novel.
Have you published it?
I've not. I like to write poetry.
Yeah, do you?
I like to write. I've written a book. It's not really a book about myself, but I've written a book about things that I think are important that I've been involved in South Carolina. Maybe one day when I'm not in politics, when I'm not doing what I'm doing, maybe I'll be like you and be in the media and write a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you get into politics?
Well, I grew up in a small town, and I live in a small town. And for me, it was when I moved back to Canada with my children and my wonderful wife, I became involved in everything. And that tends to happen. You know, you're in Greenwood, people understand that, McCormick where I was. So I served on all these boards and things that I volunteered in, and when I became involved in the House of Representatives. I was a prosecutor for the city of Camden, and the House of Representatives seat came open. I never envisioned myself running for office. My family had been involved in politics, but I had never been involved. I was the one that, like, didn't go out and work on the family campaigns. But it seemed like the right thing to do. It seemed like there was an opportunity to give back to my community. Mm-hmm. It seemed like we needed to have people who were less concerned about the parties. And in small communities, I think we tend to learn that you have to work together. And so that's the attitude that I wanted to bring to Columbia. And I think I've been trying to do that for the last decade.
Did you serve on county council? I mean, I have no idea.
I didn't. No. I was a lawyer in a small town. I represent businesses and people. And I was a prosecutor for the city of Camden. You know, I served, just to give you an example, I served on a junior leadership board to help high schoolers have wider experiences. I served on a technology board for our local school district to help bring technology into the schools. I was in the Rotary Club. The things that we do in small towns, and it led me to public service.
Well, they say if you're ever on county council, that's the ultimate in being totally connected to the people that vote for you. You know, you can get a little bit away from that when you get the bigger the government that you get into.
It's really true. One of the blessings I've had, I think, again, is living in a small town. And when you're there, when I'm in Camden, people just walk in the door and tell me what they think. And when I'm in the grocery store, they know who I am and they tell me what they think. And I help people and they help me, and it's kept me connected. You know, I go home every night from the Senate. I never spend the night in Columbia. I do that because it keeps me connected. My kids go to public schools. I'm a public school graduate. That helps keep me grounded. And my wife, at the end of the day, when I come home, can care absolutely less that I'm a state senator, and really could care less that I'm running for governor.
Okay, then. Well, we've got her position on it, then, I guess. Will she join you there if you should win, Vincent?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So far, she says yes, but you never know.
Okay. All right. Well, that could be interesting. There you go. But speaking about public schools, you know, one of the issues that's out there is about vouchers. And should the dollars follow the child? Should public school just have the advantage of the dollars? What is your position on that?
Well, I don't support vouchers. I think that we look for gimmicks and magic bullets too often in education in South Carolina, whether it's vouchers or more standardized testing or whatever you want to call it. It's always looking for the magic bullet. My mom was a teacher. I'm a public school graduate. I'll be the first public school graduate in the governor's office in, I think, more than a decade. But I focus on the basics to improve public schools. And what we know works is getting kids early. So I'm a strong proponent of four-year-old kindergarten full day offered in every county in South Carolina. That's not true now. Georgia's done it for 20 years, and they saw great results with it. I believe that the dollar should be in the classroom, not in more bureaucracy, not in more flat-screen TVs, but in the classroom, and that means you pay your teachers good money. And we pay some of the worst salaries in America to our public school teachers. They're below Georgia, below North Carolina, below the Southeastern average. When we have those additional dollars in the state budget for education, I want to see it go into full-day four-year-old kindergarten and teaching and paying teachers good money so we can keep them and have good, high-quality teachers. That's what matters.
Well, but why are you against letting the dollars follow the student? If parents are supposed to have the right to decide what's the best education, we all know that children do not learn at the same rate. They all learn differently. Why would you be against letting the dollars follow the child and making public school accountable to the fact that they've got to produce the best product in order to have students going there? You said you're a product of public schools. I think everybody would prefer that their child go to public schools, but we don't always see the results in public schools that we could see if we decide to put them in private or charter schools or.
Right, so I don't think pulling our public tax dollars out of public schools and sending them to private schools is going to help make our public schools succeed. I think what it will do is cut off funding to public schools.
But would it not make the schools better? If you had to compete for the dollars, which is what our whole premise in the United States is, the more we compete, the better the product, the more people will shop the product.
I guess that sounds good in theory and ideology, but in practical reality, it's not true. It's like saying that if you live on a private road, that you shouldn't have to pay taxes for roads, that you should just keep your money and go pave your private road. There are some things that are a collective good in South Carolina. I think Thomas Jefferson, in our country, I think Thomas Jefferson probably stated it the best when he said that a vibrant democracy requires a public education. He said it better than that. but he basically was saying that it is a collective important priority that we have public education. And if we ever say we're giving up on public education because we don't think it works, and instead we'll send our public tax dollars to private schools, then you will see less accountability because there is no accountability in as we have in public schools, in private schools, because you don't want the government involved in private schools. I don't want the government going into a private school and saying, you know what, you got to meet these standards, you got to have these, take these tests. I think that people that want to go to private schools go there for a reason. It's because they don't want to have what's there in public schools.
But would our public schools become better?
No.
If they were not trying to get all the dollars by getting all the students that they could get, and people said, oh, I got to go to that kindergarten class because that teacher's great and that school is great and I want my child to go there, which the reason people send them to private schools is because they decide they would rather them go there than to the public school because obviously the public school isn't meeting the needs.
Well, there are a variety of reasons people go to private schools. South Carolina's a long history, and pre-1960, we only had three or four private schools. Now we have hundreds of private schools. No, I don't think that our public schools will somehow magically get better. I think there's always this desire for a silver bullet.
Not magically, but try to get the dollars because I want to be good. Yeah.
There's always a silver bullet approach to education. I hear it over and over again, whether it's vouchers or tax credits or more standardized testing. None of it works. It's gimmicks. And what works is really good teachers in the classroom, small class sizes, and getting kids early. We know that works. What doesn't work is, you know, whatever the latest fad or gimmick is, as good as they may sound.
Okay. All right. So now you know. That's his position, folks. All right. What else are we going to talk about here today? I wanted to talk about, you know, we had video poker back in the day. Wouldn't gambling be a good thing to raise dollars here in the state of South Carolina? I'm not talking about video poker. I'm just talking about gambling in any of a number of means.
You know, there are a lot of things that would generate revenue in South Carolina. One of my opponents is for legalizing pot. That might generate revenue. I don't support it. I do think that there could be a place for consideration in some of our resort areas that it might be appropriate. I think we'd be very careful. I think that we don't want to have, for example, a casino on every corner in South Carolina. I don't want to see that what we saw with video poker, where it was highly addictive and it was preying on the people who really couldn't afford it and were, it was highly addictive. But I don't rule anything out. I say if there's something that would work, if it could be done in a way that would be a positive net for the state, and it would help grow our economy in a good way, then we should consider it. So I don't rule anything off the table. I don't know that it would, but I think the careful consideration should be given to any options.
Sure. Now, you just brought up about marijuana here, and that, of course, since Colorado decided to jump right in, and then, what is it, Washington and a couple of other states there. And, of course, now we do have medicinal marijuana, correct?
For some purposes.
Right.
And I think it's important when we're approaching medicinal marijuana or anything else.
I've got a real ache in my elbow.
Yeah, you need to get don't mind any comments. I tend to say that we really need to listen to the medical authorities when we're making decisions like that. Look,
but what something has passed, though. What has actually
so
passed?
So we passed this past year that cannabis oil, mm-hmm. which is used in certain treatments, and I'm not a physician, so I'm not going to tell you what for, but in certain treatments, is legal in South Carolina.
For some type of seizures, I
yes.
think we've read some of the
seizures
results.
And things like that. So that's a highly specific, specified derivative in use. I believe that as we determine what drugs are acceptable, that we really want to defer to the scientific and medical community consensus. And that's what leaders like me should look toward. And I don't have all the answers, but sure. I'm open to examining it and seeing what our physician community legitimately thinks is appropriate. I don't think we want to get in between doctors and patients.
Correct. But do we want to open it up like the state of Colorado has?
Because no, I don't believe we do. I don't believe recreational drug sales, whether it's cloaked as medicinal mm-hmm. or truly recreational, is in the best interest of South Carolina.
Okay. All right. So there you go, folks. See, you thought he might be in favor of it, and now you find out he's not.
I just try to shoot straight.
Okay. All right. Now, what about unions? There's been a big fight about having unions in the state of South Carolina. One of the things that has made us, and in fact, I just heard today on the news that they have just, I do not remember who, but is the fourth best environment for business. That's what they came up with. That's what I heard on the news. And that Texas is actually number one for a business climate as far as incentives, the workforce, all these things. But does a union have a basis to be here in South Carolina, since really it has given us some advantages to not have a union? What
well,
do you think?
I think it's important first to understand the state of South Carolina's economy, because there's a lot of falsehoods out there. We have above the national average in unemployment. We have seen declining incomes in this state over the last 4 years. In other words, we're making less money now than we were 4 years ago. Actually, we were rated as the – you have to look at who's rating these things. Business
That's right.
climate's
I said
one
I did
thing.
Not,
yeah.
I did not know.
But Insider Business rated us as the fifth worst economy, not business climate, but economy mm-hmm. in the country about a month ago. Things are tough in this state right now.
They're very tough if you're in the jewelry business. You didn't come in through my jewelry store, but I've got a jewelry store out there, Vincent. If you'd like to look at something to persuade
I'll
your wife
Amy
to move.
Next time,
yeah.
Yes. Truthfully, that's a good point, though. And we'll talk about that a little bit if we have a moment. But economic development, the strategy for economic development in the state is about 40 years old, and the lack of focus is on small business, which is how you grow wealth in a community and a state. But your question was about unions, and I like to answer the question. There's not an argument about unions in South Carolina because there aren't unions in South Carolina.
Right.
I believe South Carolina should remain a right-to-work state,
okay.
and that means people have the right to do what they want to do. I believe that if somebody wants to join a union, then that's their business. But if they don't, they should not be made to. And that has been the position of South Carolina law for quite a while. And I think it works for people. And I think it's important that people have that choice. So I would keep that policy in place as governor.
Okay. And I tell you what, let's take a quick break, Lindsay. How about 2 minutes? And we're going to get right back here so I can get a few more questions in to Senator Vincent Shaheen. If you have a question for him, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here. We're talking with Senator Vincent Shaheen. He wants to be the next governor for the state of South Carolina, and he's transversing the state, being in debates, and doing all this good stuff. In fact, they're having a fish fry tonight at 6 o'clock right out there at the Farmers Market right behind the Civic Center. So I guess you'd love everybody to come by and see you.
Absolutely. Come have a little fish, and we can talk how we can change the state and make it a great place that it deserves to be.
What if they want a lot of fish?
That's fine.
Okay.
You know, truthfully,
we got some big eaters here.
I eat fish quite often, so they might have my piece.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the other questions I wanted to talk about, you know, we talk about our schools. We talk about getting people engaged. You know, one of the things that I think is probably going to work either for or against some of the candidates is that, will the voters turn out? A lot of people are very disengaged with what's happening, not only, shall we say, in our state, but in Washington, D.C. And I think everybody should get out and vote.
Absolutely.
But I also think one of the things that we should be teaching in our schools is civics, because our kids don't know how government works.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when we look at, we talked about public schools earlier, part of the problem in public schools right now is that there was a gimmick approach taken, which was we will have standardized testing. We will evaluate everything based on that standardized testing. And that testing essentially covers math and reading, which means that other important, creative, wonderful subjects like the arts and also like civics tend to get neglected. And that's why I want to move us away from this obsession. It's really, listen, I've got kids in school. Well, two of them have graduated. The twins are at Clemson right now. But one of them is
still
in
middle school.
Costs more now.
Yeah.
But,
did you get any lottery money?
They got scholarships. I'm very proud of them.
Okay,
they did well.
Good.
But really, you know, I know firsthand the obsession that goes on in the way it takes over and transforms the classroom, especially as you get closer to testing time, and how the teachers really feel constrained and
I think the only thing they teach them in school is to cram for the test.
Right, exactly.
I don't think they teach them to learn.
Bingo. I think you've got it, and I think that's why the civics bothers you so much, because when you learn civics, you're actually learning how to learn. You're learning the framework, how to be a good citizen, how to use the skills, how to understand where we came from and who we are and what we should expect. I'll share that with you. It's a big frustration as a son of a school teacher who got out about the time that the testing mantra came in. I think that it's something that we need to work toward changing, and we need to advocate in the governor's office. You know, you mentioned people's disenchantment with government right now.
Mm-hmm.
I share that, and it's part of why I'm running for governor. I am a lifelong South Carolinian. I really believe that our state government should do good things. And what I've seen over the last 4 years, 8 years, is a bunch of people who get elected and go to jail, who violate the ethics laws over and over again, who embarrass us on late-night TV. And I'm really sick of it. I'm sick of people getting elected in the state, whether it's the governor or the former governor or the former treasurer, or I could go on and on and on, the, you know, Speaker of the House. And, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Why is it like that in South Carolina? I mean, you know, it's just like we're the butt of a lot of things here.
Well, I tell people if you want to have honest, ethical government, you have to elect honest and ethical leaders. I think that South Carolina's, I think that one-party domination is unhealthy. It was unhealthy when the Democrats ran South Carolina, and we saw lost trust, which was the big ethical scandal back in the 80s. And I think it's very unhealthy right now, and it's why you see so many Republican leaders going to jail or violating the ethics laws. You need a healthy check and balance. You need a healthy debate, a healthy discussion. And I don't think we have that right now in South Carolina. I am running in part to try to bring that honesty and integrity back to state government. People say, well, how can we know that you will do that? And I say, just look at the track records. You know, look at my track record and look at Governor Haley's track record on ethics violations, on use of state cars and planes and equipment. And I'm proud to say that I've tried to do right. I'm not perfect, but I have consistently tried to do what's right.
Well, just wait. You get to be governor, they'll find something on you, Vincent. Just you wait. I'm telling you, that's just the way I think that it works, because I don't think it matters whether you're in state government in South Carolina, the federal government. I mean, look at the mess our federal government
is awful.
In.
Absolutely.
The scandals just keep appearing one right after the other, whether it's the IRS or the veterans. How about our veterans?
You know, I was I was very disappointed with how the federal government has been handling our veteran services. I released a plan about 6 months ago for the state to help step in the breach, to help in our veterans' hospitals, and help provide health care to our veterans on these waiting lists right now.
Correct.
And to provide some bridge financial support for those who have applied for their benefits, their disability benefits, and are in a limbo, essentially. And as governor, that's the kind of thing I want to do. I want to solve problems, not make problems. And if we ever give up and say that our leaders can't be people of integrity, then we don't even need to go vote at that point.
Well,
so we can't give up.
Well, you know, I certainly hope that people do get out and vote, because I think it's if you're a registered voter, it's a responsibility. You know, when we look at Afghanistan and them walking around with their purple fingers and so proud that they were able to vote, and we here in the United States, we just take it all for granted.
All too often. Yeah. It's one of my great frustrations, but it's also why I go out and engage voters every day. I think leaders nowadays, elected officials, politicians, they tend to disengage from the public. You know, I do the TV thing, because if you don't run television, you're not going to have much of a chance to get elected. But I also do that retail politician connection. I think it's still very important. It reminds you of why you're doing it. It reminds you of what's really going on out there. You hear the stories of people
Absolutely.
In real life. And so I continue to do it.
What do you think about the dollars? This is maybe off the subject, but I don't think so. What do you think about the dollars that people raise to be able to run for office and the amount of dollars that it takes? I mean, there's $3 million, $5 million. I mean, there's huge dollars out there. And I think it takes a lot of people away from the ability to be able to run. I mean, Joyce Dickerson is running against Tim Scott. She's got $3,000 in her bank account. I mean, you know, it's hard.
I think it's awful. I think it's corrupting. I understand it probably better than the average person, because I'm having to do it. But essentially...
But do you have to sell your soul to get somebody's donation?
You should not have to sell your soul
but
to get somebody's...
But do people.
Absolutely. Of course it happens.
Sure.
It happens all the time. It's highly corrupting. It's important for those of us who run to try to maintain that distance. But it is an incredibly difficult situation to be in. And it also, beyond the fact that it can tend to corrupt our government, it also pulls elected officials away from people. So
Correct.
For me to run for governor, I have to spend a crazy amount of time raising money, which means...
We get 5 or 6 emails a day from you, Vincent. We wanted to actually, one of our questions was, how much does it cost you to send out emails? I think the latest one was just asking for $4. Jeez, Vincent.
Cheaper than postage in the
mail. I guess so.
You know, I'm really proud that in this campaign, I've actually outraised Governor Haley in donations from South Carolina, which is saying something with an incumbent governor. In other words, I've raised more money from South Carolina than she has. I'm also really proud that we have 6,000-plus donors. Those are a lot of people who give $4 or $10 or $20 or $25.
Well, hell yeah. You think they probably would, just so you wouldn't barrage them anymore,
whatever
Vincent.
Whatever it takes to keep it going. But it really, your question, and I don't know that I have the answer, which is frustrating. But money and politics has gotten out of control.
Mm-hmm.
It is corrupting. It takes away from an elected official's time and ability to go connect with the public.
Well, I just wonder if you had a cap, $100,000, you know, and then the rest of it, you had to be out there seeing the people, talking
yeah.
to the people. I mean, that there
Absolutely.
Was a cap
yeah.
that would say, you know, it doesn't matter. If you have $5,000, okay, but the max
right.
you're going to be able to raise is $100,000. Would it not change the politics some?
It clearly would. I think that it would be found to be illegal under our system, but it clearly would change the politics. Hey, my life would be a lot easier. I can promise you that. I would love it.
There you go. All right. Well, I'm going to give you 2 minutes. I've covered just about all my questions, but I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell people. I wish we had more time, but I'll give you 2 minutes to tell the people of Greenwood County and the surrounding areas why they should vote for you November 4th.
Thank you for the 2 minutes, and when I'm governor, I'll come back and take 2 more.
Okay.
I'm running for governor truly to restore honesty and integrity to the governor's office. That's why I'm doing it. We've had a governor who has had multiple ethics violations, who has abused the state plane and the state car, who has basically brought too many of our state agencies to a level of dysfunction that is mind-boggling, whether it's the Department of Social Services, where kids have literally been harmed when they should have been helped, or the Department of Revenue, where Governor Haley's department was hacked into and all our information stolen, and the incompetence level there was huge. So I'm running for governor to restore that accountability, that honesty, to do the basics in public education, to raise teacher salaries and get early childhood education kickstarted in South Carolina, to fix the roads and the bridges of this state, to focus on our economy, not just on recruiting big business mm-hmm. branches to the state, but also to helping small business succeed. Because you only really grow economically and in incomes if your own local businesses are succeeding and you're growing wealth from within. I'm running for governor because I'm tired of the late night TV jokes about South Carolina's leaders. I believe we're better than that. And I'm running for governor because I want to work with Democrats and Republicans and people all across this state to improve South Carolina in the way that we all know we deserve. The one thing I know is if you don't change things, things never change. We've been stuck in a rut in South Carolina too long, and it's time to bring that honesty and integrity back to our state government.
Well, there you go. That is Senator Vincent Shaheen right here on WCRS. Thanks for making it here, although you were late. Thanks for coming,
thank you.
I'm glad we were able to work it out so you could be on with us this afternoon.
I am too, and I apologize for being late, and I look forward to coming back on time.
All right, sounds good. That's going to do it for WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody.